Hi, this is David Skrika, editor of AddictedToProfits.net. This is another in our series of interviews with corporate CEOs. And again, as the gold market and the precious metals market seems to be firming and breaking out of a nearly six-year base and eight-year bear market, we're looking at opportunities that are really leveraged to the upside. And my experience is some of the best opportunities are companies that have ounces in the ground and production coming up within, say, a 12, 24, 36-month time frame, because they have the advantage of being able to expand the resource and then get the cash flow from that production. And in the past, I've had stocks like Desert Sun, Avion Resources. These companies have exploded higher. And I found a new such deal, and it's perfect timing. And it's also through a good friend of mine who's actually he had a deal called Underworld, which was taken over, I think it was in 2010, by Kinross for about $138 million. And so he's had a history of successes, and he's taking over a silver mine in Bolivia that he's looking to drill, expand, and put into production. So he'll tell us a bit about that. So his name is Mike Williams. He's the CEO of Aftermath. Mike, thanks for being here. And tell us a bit about yourself, how you got into the industry, maybe the success of Underworld, and what you plan on doing with Aftermath. And by the way, Mike always has the best names for companies. He had Underworld, he had Full Metal Mining. There's definitely no PC.
Vendetta.
Yeah. Vendetta is his other deal. We'll probably do an interview about that one time. But and that's also actually a near production deal as well. But yeah, tell us a bit about yourself.
Thanks, David. To correct something, we're in Chile, not Bolivia, which, South American mining, Chile's probably the preferred location there, because politically it's as close to North America and the West as there is in South America. So it's a good location from that point of view. But just to give you a bit of history, as you mentioned, I was involved. I was the founder of Underworld Resources, which we sold in 2010 to Kinross. We found a gold deposit in the Yukon, which kicked off, I think someone said, the largest land rush in Canadian history. And it certainly, I think by the time we had ended up selling the company, like 300 other companies surrounding us up there. But what I really liked about that story was we had spent $20 million in exploration, and we had it sold within 36 months to Kinross, as you mentioned, for $139 million. So the risk-reward ratio was certainly good there, and all our shareholders did really well. Now, having said that, I'd been in the industry 10 years previous to that and had been through the various cycles. And a lot of historically, we've always had really good valuations for pure exploration stories. But what I realized after the discovery at Underworld was those type of valuations were going to be harder and harder to get, because you could see the institutions were tired of paying for exploration. We were very fortunate that Underworld worked out, and it was good science, and I give our geologists and engineers all the credit in the world. But it's sometimes tough to capture lightning in a bottle twice from what we call a greenfields discovery, which is, you stake somewhere, you do some soil sampling, then you decide where you drill and you put other drills in. So I changed my model a little bit, and I've gone more of an engineering bend than a pure exploration. And so what I look for now is ounces or tons in the ground. I'm agnostic when it comes to a commodity. Having said that, I think I put gold and silver at the top, copper, then zinc, and then maybe nickel. That's what we're looking for. That's where our strength is. But I partnered with a mining engineer named Peter Volgaris. Now, Peter's well known within mining circles. He was with Robert Friedland at Ivanhoe for 7 years, where he did all the underground development for the giant Oyu-Tolgoi mine in Mongolia, which I think is the largest copper gold mine to come into production in the last 10 years. And Peter did, as I say, all the pre-production work there. So very good on the engineering and on the geological side. He's also a geologist. So we then have found a project in Australia, a lead zinc project called Pegmont. And then we expect to have that sold this year. So what we're looking, okay, what's next? And what we've decided to focus on is silver. And we don't like going to areas that are politically risky, hence we're in Chile. But we found something that already has ounces in the ground that we think we can expand on and make it economic within 24 to 36 months. So we picked up two projects. Combined, they have 50 million ounces in indicated category. But with a little bit of work, I think we can increase that to a point where we can demonstrate to the market the overall economics. And it looks like, and you know more about this than I, we're heading into what I think is going to be a really good, A, precious metal market, and B, certainly a mining market, because it hasn't been good for the last 10 years. But it looks like things are starting to turn. And what I've done the best on is coming out of these bad cycles into a mining sector. I've always stayed to the industry. I know a lot of other people in Canada went off into different sectors. Our strength is mining. We're mining guys. That's where we've made our money and made our shareholders money, and that's what we continue to do going forward.
Yeah, I should know that Underworld, it was 2010 you were taking over, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, so and of course that was very early in the cycle because the new cycle kind of began after the financial crisis, and I think Underworld IPO'd in 2009, so you guys were barely even trading a year. And by the way, sorry about the Bolivia, it was because Apogee also had a Bolivian property. That's
correct.
That's
correct.
Yeah, was the issue I was running into there. Yeah, so and Chile, and just for anyone who doesn't understand South America and tends to lump all the countries together, I've been to Chile numerous times, and it is easily the most advanced and politically stable of all the South American countries. People call it South America light. It's actually, when you go to Santiago, you'll basically think you're in a first world city. It actually probably is more first world than a lot of cities in North America. It's easily probably the easiest place to do business as well. And in terms of the macro market, and then again, you can, expand again a little more on the company after this is, I do a lot of technical work, and there's this simple term we have in technical analysis, and I've been saying it over and over again. The longer the base, the more the space, meaning the longer you it's like coiled spring. The longer you kind of build a bottom, the bigger the breakout usually is. Well, we've been in a 6-year, basically basing pattern for both gold and silver, and gold broke out when it broke 1400, and silver probably needs to go above 1750 to confirm that, but silver tends to move a little later. And that when that happens, you're talking probably about multi-year, maybe even a decade-long bull market like the 2000s again. And also with silver, there's another technical thing, the gold-to-silver ratio, and I'll put a chart of it below this. And right now that is historically an all-time low. I think the early 90s was the only time it was this low. It got almost to this level in 2008. And that just means like silver is very cheap compared to gold and probably has more leverage and upside at this point. And there's very few pure silver plays, but at this point you'd probably want to buy a silver play because you're going to get more upside with the underlying commodity. So in terms of the actual property itself, do you have a timeline for maybe potential production? Or are you just going to be looking to build up the resource in the next year or two?
Well, what we've got to – sorry, David, go ahead.
No, that's it. That's it.
What we're going to do is we're going to do some initial drill work. Our one project called Chelicolos, currently sitting with 30 million ounces in the indicated category. We'd like to further that over the next 24 months, do drilling and get to a point where we can demonstrate that the economics work at that point. The previous people that had it, Mandalay Resource, has looked at it as an underground operation, underground mining, which tends to be more expensive. We actually think it might work as an open pit, and that's the type of drilling we're going to do to prove. So what it would demonstrate, we'd hope to be able to demonstrate in the next 24 to 36 months, that ore body actually works on an open pit mining method, and that we have enough ounces to demonstrate the economics. At that point, you could look at going to a feasibility study, or if it's robust enough, it could certainly enter into M&A activity, because I think the goal is, you know, to get those, our deposits over 100,000 ounces combined. Then I think you've got a real silver company. And as you mentioned earlier, there's very few pure silver plays out there. Now, our model is we like to think we can make these projects work at current metal prices or have the possibility of doing further work to make them work at further metal prices. So what I'm trying to say is we don't need the metal price to go higher to make it work. We just need to add additional ounces. Now, to your point, I think metal prices will go higher on the silver side. So it just makes everything look all the more robust, but I don't want to rely on the metal price to have to go up to make it work. That's why we like this project. A, it has the grade, and B, it has the size potential. And so I think there's a methodology to make it work. Now, the challenge with Chile, and it's probably the most important thing in that country, is water. It's up in the Atacama Desert, which are historic mining areas. Chile produces the number one copper producer in the world. I believe it's number four for silver. So their whole economy largely revolves around mining. It's a significant portion. But up in those northern regions, it is desert and it's very dry. It's a very good place to be if you have water. Now, there is water in the region and we think we would be able to have access to that water when we go to put these into production, and I think that's critical moving forward.
Yeah, I think the Atacama is actually the driest desert in the world. It's the driest.
That's right, yeah.
I think there's some parts of it that have rain like once or twice a year or something like that, right? So,
well, I know the government is saying, and we do have some water permits there. We need to bump them up, so buy additional water off someone else. But we already have some water permitted on the one project. And then the other project is close to an existing mine that we might be able to secure some water on. And that other mine is, I think there's a deal to be had there on doing some work with those guys. So I think we're okay on the water. And in fact, Teck is building a Cuadra Blanca desalination pipeline to the coast. It's a $500 million pipeline. Goes right through our project. That's 1,300 liters a second. So there is water in the region. It's just a case of securing commercial terms.
Yeah, and if you look at a map of Chile, you're not too far away from the ocean anywhere in the country.
No, it's not high altitude, which is another critical thing. If you're going to be in Chile, we're off the Pan American Highway. There's power close by, there's roads, and so you've got access, power, and hopefully water.
And I'm sure the cost of production, or the cost to come down, because I think the Chilean peso has been pretty weak the last 5 or 6 years, right?
Yeah, it's, I would put Chile somewhere in the middle. It's, the cost of your exploration is probably comparable to being in Canada. Maybe, we're just going to be looking at our drill contracts. Your actual mining costs are probably comparable to Canada, the United States. It's something we're worth paying additional money on the mining and exploration and development side to have a safe political environment. Their court system is very good. It's the best in South America. A lot of countries use Chilean mining law as their case studies, and they build their own mining laws around the Chilean. So mining's a risky enough business. I don't want to go to bed at night worrying about our projects with governments or nationalizations or, NGOs interfering. And largely with Chile, you don't have that, if you do things properly. And the government has rules in place that mandate that everything is done correctly as they should.
Yeah, and for those unaware, Chilean politics, because if everyone thinks about what happened, 35 years ago or 45 years ago, sorry, with Allende or Pinochet. But, now it's pretty well westernized. There's kind of a center-right party and a center-left party, and that's about it right now. So it's like I said, it's extremely stable. And also in terms of the finance side, one reason I like the deal is because you guys are raising some money right now, and I'm participating in it, just so people know. But you guys are raising money right now, but you have a pretty tight share structure. Like, at the current price at 9-10 cents Canadian, I think you're talking, even post-financing, like a $4 million market cap? And that's always important, because you guys won't have a lot of stock to chew through if you have good results and if, say, the silver market continues to solidify and rally.
Well, I'm currently sitting with just a little bit under a $3 million market cap. So post-financing will be a little over 5. I think we offer a lot of leverage on the silver side with upside, because management and insiders, we control, you know, sort of 40% of the company, up to 40%. So, and then, you know, there's some people that are participating that also have the same opinion on the silver market, at the, you know, they're looking for a vehicle that they can hold on to. You know, if we deliver the results, we think we can. We think there'll be strong shareholders. And the idea is, you know, next 24, 36 months to get to a point where you can put economics to the project. And at that point, we can decide, okay, do we want to sell the company, or do we want to put this into production ourselves? A lot will be incumbent on how it goes with the upcoming drilling. But, you know, we've already got a good leg up, because it's not like I need to find the ore. The ore is already there. We know we haven't what the ounces are. I just need to increase them so the deposits are open. I just need to do enough drilling to prove enough up that we can put economic parameters around it.
And it should be noted, this is really, like, important, because I always use my past experience to, and this is why I like deals like this, because there's two deals I'm thinking about myself, and one was Avion, which ended up being taken over, and they're in Africa, in Mali, and the other one is actually one that's currently traded. It's called Champion, trades under CIA, and that was an iron ore deposit. But in each case, it was similar. They had these big deposits. Both were like these past producing mines, but they just drilled it differently and expanded the resource. And then when the next upcycle came, in Avion's case in 2009 in gold and silver, and Champion's case recently in iron ore, these companies were able to, you know, put these things back into production, be way more efficient, way lower costs, way more ounces or way more pounds of iron ore in case of Champion. And these companies went from being like penny stocks like yours into being multi-dollar type, you know, companies. And like I said, in the case of Avion, they got taken over. And that's why this is kind of my favorite model, because you already have the resource. Like you said, you just have to expand it, and then you also get the enthusiasm of like a new bull market. And by the way, just so, because we haven't mentioned it, your ticker is AAG. A is in Adam, A is in Adam, G is in Grand. Dash. You still have the H on it. I'm sure you'll get that taken off soon.
That comes off with this financing.
Okay, on the TSX. So.
Correct.
Okay. Anyway, I think we'll leave it at that. And like I said, when you guys are doing your drilling program, maybe we'll catch up in a few months.
Absolutely.
And see where you're
at. You know, I think just to summarize, right now we're valued at 8 cents ounce in the ground compared to the comps. The comps are at 22 cents. So I think there's an arbitrage right out of the gate, which is what we wanted to do. We wanted to price this. I think, if you look to last cycle, a lot of things got overvalued too quickly. You know, if the shareholders can't make money out of the gate, it makes it difficult, because you're actually drilling to meet a market cap that justifies your current share price. And that's a zero-sum game, because it's a house of cards.
Yeah.
You want to always be added accretive value as you drill. Hopefully the stock gets re-rated, moves up, and then, you know, all the shareholders are happy. And then I think that was the problem last cycle. So, you know, we have learned lessons as an industry, and I look forward to it, and I'll keep you informed as we move the project ahead.
Yeah, actually, we might even be doing this in person, because we were just talking off air right before we started. Mike and I are long-suffering Raider fans, and if we end up at a game together, you know, sometime in the fall, we'll probably just do this in person rather than over the phone. So
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay, so take care, and have a good, I guess, holiday week. And
thanks, David.
And by the way, if anyone's interested in the financing, they can contact me, because like I said, I'm participating, and I'll get you in connection in doing it. So thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot, David. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.